Yesterday, St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, it was a rainy day. When I looked out the window, I could see that there was nobody in the water, nobody on the beach, nobody in the pool. And while I was looking outside, seeing if I could see any turtles swimming or fish swimming, I noticed that one of the floors below us, we happen to be on the third floor of a three-story building, a soap bubble, you know, a child's bubble, came floating out of the floor below us. So apparently they have children on the second floor, and in order to keep them amused on a rainy day, they were blowing soap bubbles. And that got me to thinking, we are actually bubbles. We're bubbles of energy. And if I told you about magnetic fields, the field or the bubble around a magnet, you would go, oh, I hadn't ever thought of that field as a bubble, but in fact, it is a representative of a bubble. I think we have force fields around us, and those force fields are like bubbles. We're with friends, and the friends were flipping through TV, and there was some sort of contest, sort of game show thing going on, where people were inside of bubbles, and they were crashing into one another. So these bubbles were designed to protect the people, but they were bumping into one another, trying to knock one another down. I thought, okay, that's interesting. This week in the United States, the National Football League, the NFL, has been holding a draft of college players to see which team can acquire, make offers of financial compensation to which players. So really what they're saying is, we want to choose you, and then we're going to let you get all kinds of equipment on you. Helmet and shoulder pads, hip pads, knee pads, thigh pads, rib pads, and then you crash into other men out on the field. You'll get paid a lot of money. You're going to be physically damaged by it, if not mentally damaged by it, but you're going to do this crashing into one another. Then I thought about Olympic boxing, which I think is an interesting art form, unlike professional boxing. In the Olympic boxing, boxers wear headgear, protective headgear, and they wear cups to protect the lower parts of their body, and they have specified gloves and glove weights on their hands, and then they go into a ring and pound on one another for X number of minutes, X number of times in a given boxing match. You go, in each one of these cases, you could say, well, I can see the point that it looks like all of these things are bubbles. And if you look and say, you drive down the road in your car, you go, wait a minute, your car really represents a bubble. It is your container that you move down the road at whatever rate you're going when you go to the grocery store or work or whatever. The room you're in right now could be your bubble. Your home could be your bubble. Every cell in your body is, in fact, like a bubble. It's got a cell membrane, which is the outer rim, outer edge of the bubble, and a lot of activity is going on inside of that bubble. And you go, yeah, I'm getting it. And so let me just make this point. Each one of us has developed in a bubble. Our lives developed in a bubble. You know what that bubble was called? Amniotic sac. It is a bubble within the bubble, which we refer to as the womb of our mothers. And you go, oh, and if you've had children, you have been one of the bubbles that contained the bubble that contained your child. It's like, okay, so we're in a bubble. We're in a bubble. Yep, and we translate and we transmit energy from within our bubble. Now, you've heard this expression, maybe about yourself, maybe about other people. That kid is in their own world. She's in her own world. And another way of saying that is that child is within some sort of mental bubble that they've created, that they perceive, and they're thinking about the contents or whatever they've got going on in that bubble. Here's one of the points today. I think we need to strengthen our sense of bubble. Our sense of bubble. Now, you've probably not heard that expression before. Neither have I until just now. We need to strengthen our sense of bubble. But here's what I mean. Let's say we are all in a room. We're standing around in a room, maybe chatting. And another person enters that room. Now, prior to this conversation that we're having right now, me talking about this, we might have said, well, this is reality. Two or three or four people are standing in a room, and a fourth person comes into the room. So now that instead of three human beings in the room, there are four human beings in the room. Instead of three bodies in the room, there are four bodies in a room. However, I would suggest that we can consider from this moment on that a fourth bubble has entered this larger bubble, and there were three bubbles already in that room. Each one of us is really a bubble. So you go, well, I certainly can see when I put on a shirt or a blouse or other clothing items that I'm dressing my physical body, but what size is my bubble? How this field around me, what is it? I think it probably varies according to individual, but let's just assume for a second that I'm talking about this bubble extending 3 feet in all directions out from us, above us and below us and to the sides, front and back of us. Our bubble is this area around us. And around, when I say around us, I mean around the densest part of us, the part that we can see and feel and touch if we were to look in the mirror or grab hold of our hand or something. One of the aspects of our bubble, unlike, say, a shell of a chicken, which, of course, is a bubble, and inside of that egg of a chicken or a duck is another bubble that keeps the developing chicken duck safe. But because this is not rigid, our outer shell, outer coating, outer boundary of our bubble is not rigid, it can extend outward, or if we wanted to connect or reach for something or that person that just walked into the room, or it can withdraw, it can pull back, it can try to avoid, it can recede, and it can reject. So if we looked at that bubble that just walked through the door, we could go, depending on what we perceived, if we perceived that person as safe or attractive or friendly, then it makes sense that our energy, our bubble, would have extended toward that person. If we knew them, we might extend our energy in looking at them, in greeting them, talking to them, extending our hands to shake their hand or to embrace them with a hug. But if we didn't know that person, or we perceive something scary about them, threatening, dangerous, different, odd, we might have withdrawn our energy in order to protect our bubble from maybe this unknown element or danger or whatever else we would have perceived. So if we're in a bubble, and we're always in a bubble, what is life like inside of the bubble? If I say, what's life like inside of a bubble? If this image came to you, and it did to me, about a child whose immune system is so compromised that they put a kid inside of a germ-free plastic container, and they're trying, because the immune system is non-functioning, that they're afraid that if any kind of bacteria, any kind of foreign substance body were to enter, the child could be in danger of dying from it. But that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about one of those kind of a bubbles or that extreme situation, although those things exist clearly, and they exist in varying degrees. Even though we don't live inside of a plastic bubble to keep us safe, some people go, I'm allergic to this, I'm allergic to that, and I can't be exposed to this, and I don't want to be near that, and I think we all have that going on to a certain degree. But I'm really talking about our daily life. You know, when we're dealing with even mundane stuff like getting out of bed, putting on shoes, you know, doing things around the house, doing things in the office, or important stuff that we have to do, you know, related to providing for our families, putting a roof over our head, working, thinking, feeling, speaking, acting, all of those things. That's the life that I'm talking about inside of the bubble. Because survival of our individuality is such an important thing, I can say, and I believe this to be true, that it really is goal number one of living beings, right from an amoeba right on up to us. Goal number one is the survival of our individuality, that is our sense of self, who we think we are. And that goal number one of survival is going to dictate a lot of what goes on inside our bubble and what we transmit to things outside of our bubble. I believe this is true, too, that if we want something, we need to be vibrationally equal to it so it and our bubble can occupy the same space. If we want something that we believe we're not vibrationally equal to, no matter how much we chase it and run after it, and the difference in vibration is going to keep us apart. So if we're equal to it, it can enter our bubble. If we're not vibrationally equal to it, it can't enter our bubble, which is a good thing. If we're not vibrationally equal to danger, then danger can't enter our bubble, which is a good thing because that helps our survival. I think this is what happens when we live inside of our bubble. Every time we put our attention on some object, some person, some concept, we put our attention on it, and as we do that, instantaneously, so fast, we're not usually aware of it, that we're going to compare what we're observing to our inventory of images plus emotions. I have that phrase in quotes in my mind, quote, open quote, images plus sign, cap, emotions, close quotes. I wish I had a word that described that concept, not just an image, you know, not just emotion, but an image that is so emotion-laden, it is powerful. It is a consciousness form seeking to grow, seeking to strengthen itself, seeking to maintain its own individuality. So it's like a living thing. So we consult our inventory, and it's a massive inventory. You can imagine every image that has emotion attached to it that you've ever experienced in your lifetime, from conception right up to a second ago. That's huge. And it, that database, that comparison material, gets checked, it gets reviewed, because our survival, our goal number one, says, I've got to check that in order to identify whether this object that I'm putting my attention on is a threat, or if it's neutral, doesn't have any danger, or doesn't have any friend potential, or in the third situation, whether it's an ally. Is it a threat, neutral, or is it an ally? Will it help me? I think this goes on all the time. Happens so fast, most of us can't perceive it. Having spoken about it, now maybe you're like, ooh, I just put my attention on something, and I could feel a shift. A lot of people say they can feel that contraction, depending on in their stomach, in their neck, some other place, their face. You might be able to notice this from this point on, if you don't already. If we could look at a person and see their bubble, that is the outer fringe of this field around them, we would be able to see them when they contract or shrink, depending on what they were looking at, or we could see them realizing that they were safe and this was an ally and a possible wonderful experience, we would watch them expand. Or if it were neither of those two things, then they would remain in kind of a neutral place with no significant expansion or contraction as they put their attention on whatever that object was. A few years ago, Marianne and I were in Bogota, Colombia. Marianne had a consulting gig, and I went along to carry her luggage. I'm fiddling with my headset here. I had attended military school in Colombia some years earlier, a long time ago actually, with the military, and I was looking forward to going back into seeing the difference in Bogota. Colombia to me is a fantastically beautiful country, and the people themselves are very beautiful. So one day when we first arrived, this might be the second day, we were going to be picked up by her American liaison. This is a guy who was the coordinator of the consulting gig that she was going to work on. She was going to teach a class for several days. Now, I was already planning not to like this guy. I tend to be competitive with men, not with women, but with men. And so I already had, you know, something going on in my energy field. Right, my bubble was preparing, it was toughening up, if you will, defensively. And so now, in the lobby of the hotel, is this young man. He shows up, he's about 28 years old, 6'6", good looking, and very, very friendly. Huge, huge smile. It's like, So today, I'll talk about this in terms of bubbles, but that's not how I was seeing it back then. You know, I was seeing an individual being looked at by another individual. I was the second one. This guy's name is Reese. His bubble was big. Another way to say that, his personality was big. Not only was he tall, but his energy field was big. He didn't have any hostility in it, didn't have any unfriendliness in it, he didn't have any defensiveness in his bubble. And guess what? He didn't attract it. And clearly, because he didn't have it, he didn't transmit it. In 10 seconds, I really, really liked the guy. I'm like, wow. I was watching my reaction to his bubble. I'm like, wow. And I watched him in action for the next couple of days whenever I was with them. And he interacted with everybody. In the hotel, the bellhops, the doorman, the clerks behind the desk, people standing around, the taxi driver, the waiters in the restaurant we went to, the other people that were at the dinner that we were part of. And that's how he was with Marianne and me. It was clear to me, Reese didn't have the images plus emotions that I do. Right? So whatever he experienced in his 28 years, he didn't have a whole bunch of negative experiences, specifically these. In Christ's letters, Christ mentions this, the fact that when beings are born physically, going to result in three perceived conditions: abandonment, insecurity, loss of privacy. Frankly, I believe these conditions at birth are very, very important to our lives within the bubble, much more than we realize, much more than just at birth or those early years, right on up to our final breath inside the bubble before we leave the physical bubble. And it was clear to me that Reese must not have had any kind of experiences to the extent I would have seen or felt of abandonment, insecurity, or loss of privacy. This guy was safe and connected and connecting. Consider this idea. An aspect of our survival impulse, this is our survival urge, we have the urge to avoid the feelings of abandonment, avoid the feelings of insecurity, and avoid the feelings of loss of privacy. When we meet somebody or something, whenever we put our attention on something, we, depending on our inventory of these images plus emotions regarding any one of those ideas, abandonment, insecurity, or loss of privacy, we will either go on high alert, like I did before I met Reese, and clearly how he did not when he met Marianne and me. Nobody wants to feel that they don't belong, that we're not wanted, that we aren't cared for. Those feelings are counter-survival, and for this reason, they don't feel good. That's why we try to avoid them. Like, I don't want that feeling, because that feeling going in that direction results in not surviving. And insecurity is essentially a feeling that we may not be able to protect ourselves. We may not be able to meet our own needs. We may not be able to maintain our own self-interest. We may not be able to maintain our energy, our space, our individuality, our bubble, if we interact and exchange energy with others, whatever that other is that we're putting our attention on, a person, an activity, a job, an idea, a concept. To me, the loss of privacy triggers a fear that we and our failings, the ones that we know about, you know, our evidences of our lack of, I'll say, perfection, could be exposed. And if people really, really knew that we weren't perfect, then maybe negative and painful consequences would erupt because of that. We fear that we're not going to be able to control what is known about us or how much of ourselves we reveal and to whom. This is usually why when we're in an intimate relationship over time, you know, we go on a first date, we talk about the weather and, you know, only the most wonderful aspects of ourselves, you know, knight in shining armor and damsel, it's so beautiful and on and on and on. And over time, we, you know, peel back that curtain little by little, little by little, and we're willing to reveal more about ourselves to another person. But we want to be in control of that. We don't want to be outed by surprise and be shocked by that. To me, this is the common experience of life within the bubble for a person who's self-conscious. We're trying to avoid feelings of abandonment, insecurity, and loss of privacy. But there's another viewpoint that could serve us. Let's assume that everyone, to some degree, is concerned with their own survival, and everybody wants to avoid abandonment, insecurity, and loss of privacy. Now it's a question of what strategies do we employ. Maybe this amazing level of friendliness is a way a person goes, wow, that disarms everybody. Everybody's going to end up liking a person, a man or a woman, who is like that. And certainly seemed to be the case that I saw, not only with me and Marianne, but other people around the table with Reese. But if we choose not to be self-conscious so much, but if we literally make the decision to be other-conscious, that means I'm focusing my attention and not so much on what I'm feeling inside of my bubble, but in fact, I make my goal, number one, the survival of the other person who entered the room. My concern shifts to that fourth person whose bubble now enters the room while the others of us are standing in there. That person is the last one to enter. And we go, so what do I want to do? Well, I really want to be able to offer to connect, not powerfully, not run up to that person, a stranger, or even if we knew him, and grab hold of him and hug him, but really, instead of being intrusive or overpowering, just be friendly. Just be friendly. Kind of conveys a willingness to connect. an openness of interacting with that person. And to me, this would certainly convey safety. It's like, it's safe. It's safe. And so this person who's now walking into an unknown circumstance or situation, if they had any insecurity coming in, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know who's in here, what to do, how to act. Now all of a sudden their level of insecurity would decrease. And having done those couple of things, offering that sense of belonging, that sense of safety to the other person, I think the next thing could be if we allowed that person, in response to the safety and the sense of belonging, whatever that was translated into by them, would be in a position to extend their energy. And then you go, okay. And then maybe the introductions would take place, handshakes, offers of, can I get you something? Would you like to hang up your coat? Or whatever other niceties is going to care for that person's comfort and convenience. If we think of the other person and their need for connection and belonging, safety, predictability, and respect for their border, their boundaries, in terms of who they are and what they are and what they want to share, we could be doing wonderful things for them. And as we're doing this, we could also recognize the reality of the law of cause and effect. That is, we reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. So if we are taking steps to transmit belonging, kindness, safety, welcoming, that sort of thing, chances are that's the stuff that's going to come back to us very, very quickly in terms of good feelings or over time. To me, another main point of this idea of bubble is to remember that we create the feelings of connections and belongings. We create them. So if we don't have them, it's because we're not creating them. And the feelings of always being safe, if we don't have them, it's because we're not creating them. And the reason we may not be creating either one of those is because we're using as evidence feelings in the past, images plus emotions that say we're not safe, we don't belong, we're not wanted, we're not liked, we don't fit in. But what happened when we were little kids is not necessarily germane or relevant to what we're experiencing now. Just like that was an event that was created, we're creating over time a million different creations over time. So we're constantly transmitting and creating from within this bubble. And if we don't have feelings of our safety, or rather our privacy, or what is revealed about us under our control, and we don't think we can determine how private or open we can be with people, it's because we haven't created this sense of control and respect for our own boundaries, our own privacy. Not only can we create these feelings of belonging and safety and control over our boundaries for ourselves, we can facilitate this in others. I'm not sure that we can create them in other people. I think that's an individual thing, but we can facilitate them, because a lot of people don't recognize that they have this power to create this sense. They oftentimes, you can come across this in your dealings with people, life is happening to them. They have this firm belief that life is happening to them. It's like, that as if, I don't know, fate or God or somebody else is creating it, and they just have to accept what is coming their way. Whatever is being dished out to them, they have to take in. It's like, no. That, I don't think, is true. We create. We create what we experience. And if we can have that sense of responsibility, I think we're much more empowered. A lot of people, when they say responsibility, go, uh-oh, and that equals blame. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Responsibility is causativeness, creativeness, the ability to change, make things, improve things. It's like, not blame. We all know about trial and error. If that's how human beings live and learn, then the fact that we're going to have trials and errors, like, okay, let me see, how fast can I learn from it? How fast can I modify my thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting? That's really what we want to do. And if we can help other people become aware of their ability to create their bubble, strengthen their sense of bubble, make themselves feel more connected by being concerned about the connections and feelings thereof that other people have, now all of a sudden this other consciousness that we would have experienced and other people will now be experiencing. And if we start thinking of other people and their self-interest and their good and their convenience and their comfort, all of a sudden everybody is doing that. It's a whole different experience. And I would imagine that a healthy organ in the body, the cells are essentially functioning that way, working in a cooperative environment, doing their jobs, trying to make everything work smoothly, cooperating with their neighbors. You go, wow, that would be true in a neighborhood, that would be true in a city, that would be true in a country. Yep. If we knew that we had that choice from within the bubble. I think we have a great opportunity that as we become, more aware of these instantaneous survival urges, this is the first thing that is going to ripple when we put our attention on anything, a survival urge. That first filtering that says, is this a threat? Is this neutral? Is this an ally? Is this a friend? That first ripple. And for those of us who have lots of threats in our background, lots of unpredictable situations in our upbringing, lots of times when the people that should have been our allies were in fact the threats, they were the saber-toothed tigers, and it's like, oh, I thought you were supposed to be my source of protection, my fulfillment of need, taking care of me and protecting me, but in fact, they not necessarily were. And you go, And if we've got that, and those survival urges get triggered instantly, all we have to do is take about one second, and remind ourselves that our bubbles and our lives are divinely empowered. Kind of like a balloon that's filled with air. We, through our perceptions, through our thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting, we can control the size of this field and its vibrancy, its vitality, its power, because the divine is seeking to work for us, in us, and through us. Our bubble is the container filled with divine life. And if we get tricked into being afraid that we try to seal off our bubble, we're interfering with the divine flow and support that is natural to us. All we have to do is take a second more when that urge of, that wants to trigger self-protection, we could just hold on before we react to that and make a conscious choice to stay open to the divine and stay open to whomever or whatever our attention is on. And we can contribute to that growth of that other bubble that we're attending to. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, You are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.